Blog Talk Radio.
James Bostic, A Conservative's Perspective. Tonight we're live, 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on blogtalkradio.com. You go to blogtalkradio.com and you type in the Patriot Nation Radio Network, and that's where you'll find ACP. We also do a live version on Thursday as well, also 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and a pre-recorded version that goes out from production on Sundays, and it goes to the Talk America Radio Network, talkamericaradio.org. They have a couple of audio streaming channels there. They have the Liberty and the Justice streams, and ACP can be heard on either one of those at various times throughout the day and the week. Well, a couple different stories. Obviously, the big one that's sucking all the oxygen out of the room is the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings and the Stalinist show trial that it has come to be. And here's the thing. What's going on is appeasement on the part of the Republicans. And I have an outstanding sermon I'm going to share with you today from Bruce Thornton. Mr. Thornton is a Shulman Journalism Fellow from the David Horowitz Freedom Center. David Horowitz, of course, the visionary and founder behind frontpagemag.com, an outstanding go-to website for clear, concise, and spot-on political and ideological analysis concerning liberals and conservatives all. From the playground to geopolitics, appeasing an aggressor invites simply more aggression. This timeless truth of human nature is one that we moderns can't seem to accept. We reflexively assume that a rational accommodation or concessions will be reciprocated by those who have already been proven to be ready to use any means necessary to achieve their aims, no matter how immoral, no matter how unfair, no matter how vicious. Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation hearings for the Supreme Court illustrate that this false assumption leads only to more demands and ultimately defeat. The last-minute accusations of Christine Blasey Ford, a woman who claims that decades ago Kavanaugh groped her at a high school party, and Deborah Ramirez, who accused Kavanaugh of exposing himself to her at a frat party at Yale, are transparent acts of aggression against the judge and Republicans, one engineered by Democrats. Senator Dianne Feinstein sat for months on Ford's letter, and then, just as the Democrats did in 1991 with Anita Hill's charges of sexual harassment against Clarence Thomas during his hearings, they released this information only when it appears that Kavanaugh is going to be heading for confirmation. Feinstein still has not given the Judiciary Committee an unredacted copy of the letter. A few weeks after Ford went public and after Kavanaugh said he had diaries from that summer detailing his whereabouts, The New Yorker published Deborah Ramirez's account of a drunken party filled with obscene drinking games where Kavanaugh exposed himself to Ramirez. Not dead air. Now, given that the Democrats had made public in advance their intention to derail the hearings and confirmation by any means possible, the timing of both sexual assault charges reeks. Reeks of premeditated contrivance and is intended to delay confirmation as long as possible. But in the face of this naked ploy to torpedo Kavanaugh and derail the confirmation process for partisan advantage, the Republicans seem to be reverting to their customary preemptive cringe. All the Democrats have to do is squeal sexism, and Republicans start negotiating and offering concessions. Of course, after each concession comes another demand. First, the Democrats demanded that Ford, a longtime Democrat activist, be heard. So, last week, Chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Chuck Grassley, granted another deadline extension for Ford to decide whether to testify before the committee on Monday. Senator Dianne Feinstein calls these concessions bullying deadlines. As Feinstein put it, show some heart. Wait until Dr. Ford feels that she can come before the committee. Ford doesn't feel like she can testify on Monday because she's afraid of flying, which, incidentally, this is a clinical psychologist we're dealing with. Plenty of treatment therapies out there available to conquer this fear of flying. She also talks about how much she loves surfing in Hawaii. Well, what does she do? Swim out there? Delay. Delay. Even though offers from the committee to travel to where she was were rejected, then she fears for her life because of death threats. Threats also were made to Brett Kavanaugh, his wife, his two young daughters. So now Blasey Ford demands enhanced security measures, and the committee caved and then moved the date to Thursday. So, of course, Grassley, having been intimidated into giving Ford a chance to address the committee, Ramirez and her handlers are now demanding the same privilege. Creepy lawyer for porn star Stormy Daniels, Michael Avenatti, claims to represent a woman who also should be allowed to testify to the Senate committee about Kavanaugh's partying habits while at Yale. We'll just have to see whether Grassley can find the stomach to put an end to this farce of allowing unsubstantiated charges from Democrat activists to continue to waste the committee's time. Ford and Dianne Feinstein also keep demanding an FBI investigation, even though no federal crime is being alleged, and any investigation 36 years after the fact is impossible. Ford can't remember where or when the alleged assault took place, nor how she got there or how she got home from the party where it allegedly occurred. Her own details of the event don't jibe. She told no one about the assault until 30 years later. a lifelong friend whom Ford claims was at the party has denied any knowledge of it, and she says she never met Kavanaugh. Another friend who reported that the school was abuzz with gossip about the attack retracted her statement. Two men Ford named as possible witnesses to the assault have contradicted her claims under oath. And the accused Judge Kavanaugh also under oath vehemently denies the charges. Given that 36 years have passed since the incident and the accuser's memory is so hazy and so short on coherent details, there's nothing here for the FBI to investigate. Deborah Ramirez's charge is even flimsier. Here's a catalog from the Daily Wire about this. Number one, the New Yorker couldn't find a single witness who could put Kavanaugh at this alleged party. Number two, the New York Times could not find a single person who would corroborate Ramirez's claims. Number three, the man accused of egging on Kavanaugh at this party denied Ramirez's allegations and vouched for Kavanaugh's character. Number four, a third person that Ramirez claimed was at the party says she was not there for the alleged incident. Ramirez contacted her former classmates asking about the incident and admitted that she was not sure that Kavanaugh was the male who exposed himself. A woman who claims she was, quote, best friends with Ramirez says Ramirez never mentioned the story and initially said her friend's accusations against Kavanaugh might be politically motivated. Because Deborah Ramirez, just like Christine Blasey Ford, is a registered Democrat and dedicated to leftist causes. Deborah Ramirez wasn't even sure her memory was correct until she spent 6 days going over it with her Democrat lawyer. Deborah Ramirez admits that there are holes in her memory due to how much she drank at the party. People who knew Ramirez after her time at Yale say that she never once mentioned this incident until Kavanaugh's nomination was pending. No law enforcement agency, let alone the FBI, would waste its time with an allegation of a crime decades in the past that's so patently incoherent and lacking in evidence. The call for an FBI investigation is yet another delaying tactic. Blasey Ford has finally agreed to testify, set for Thursday for now, but it's unclear whether Grassley has granted Ford any of her preposterous conditions for testifying. She will take questions from the committee, but not from outside lawyers who might not be as gentle as politicians are with one eye peeled towards the polls. Only one camera can be in the room. Kavanaugh has to testify first, a grotesque inversion of our bedrock principle that an accused has the right to confront his accuser's charges. I think this comes from the Sixth Amendment. He can't be in the room with her, apparently, because she's still traumatized and may start experiencing flashbacks. Senator Grassley should not cave on these conditions. They all compromise the old tactic of serially escalating demands that cannot be satisfied in order to compel your enemy to give in. That Grassley and the Republicans would even participate in this absurd show trial is testimony to how deeply the progressive ideological narrative has burrowed into our social and political life. If Ford actually does testify on Thursday, or Ramirez is granted the same concession, nothing material is going to be gained. Her accusation is not going to be proved true or false. We won't learn anything more about Kavanaugh that makes him any less eminently qualified for the Supreme Court. Nothing that can add to the thousands of pages of documents already presented to the committee or the hundreds of hours of the judge's testimony before rabid partisans and office seekers. vetting Kavanaugh's qualifications isn't the point. The point, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, is to delay confirmation by slandering Kavanaugh and baiting the Republicans into appearing to abuse victims of sexual assault. Why? Well, facing his likely confirmation, the Democrats, egged on by the mainstream media, specifically The New Yorker, which published a story so badly sourced, even the New York Times wouldn't touch it. They're desperately attempting to obstruct and delay this process until after the midterm elections, when they hope they will retake the Senate and thus stop any more constitutionalist judges from being confirmed to the court for the rest of the Trump term. Excuse me. The Democrats have stooped so low with these smears because they know the stakes. The courts, and especially the Supreme Court, have been critical to the progressives' program since the time of Woodrow Wilson. The biggest obstacle to the progressive dream of government controlled and managed by a technocratic oligarchy has been one thing and one thing only. The biggest obstacle is the Constitution. Its divided and balanced powers were designed precisely to rein in overreaching ambition and concentrations of power. Hence, the constitutional order must be subverted by the Supreme Court and its unaccountable justices enjoying lifelong tenure. But if Kavanaugh is confirmed, there will be five reliably constitutionalist justices on the bench who are unlikely to tolerate judicial usurpation of Congress's lawmaking powers. That's why this current nomination is a hill the Democrats are willing to beclown themselves on. Now, given how obviously partisan and hypocritical this ploy is, just as an aside here, doesn't Keith Ellison's accuser deserve to be heard? Doesn't she deserve to be believed too? Yeah. What about Juanita Broderick? She deserved to be believed and heard. Same thing with Jennifer Flowers, with Bonnie Williams, with Paula Jones. So why has Senator Grassley so far allowed himself to be played this way by the Democrats? Well, the Republicans fear the backlash from all those women voters who presumably agree with the fundamentalist feminists and insist that every accusation of sexual assault, no matter how much it's unsupported by corroborating evidence or even plausibility, has to be believed. This contention itself is an expression of the radical feminist narrative of innate male feral sexuality that makes men sexual predators. Now, the irony about this whole thing, when it comes to the feminists and how they're being manipulated by the Democrats in this and their own feminist leaders, is that today's feminists have been willing to sacrifice that earlier narrative of female power and agency, that dynamism that had been stifled by traditional views of the sexes and their capabilities. Instead, nowadays, women are Victorian hothouse flowers. They're too delicate to make their way through their lives without the paternal force of federal government protecting them. Women have really just simply exchanged one form of dependence and one double standard for another. The Democrats, America, the Democrats are using Ford and Ramirez as part of this transparently dishonest delaying tactic because they know that most Republicans have accepted this duplicitous feminist narrative and they fear challenging it, especially after the recent spate of sexual assault charges, many of them true, some false, others contested. You know, politicians consider bucking the narrative to be as politically suicidal as proposing to reform Social Security or Medicare. It's the new third rail of American politics, one that transcends party affiliation. So the widespread virtue signaling on the part of even conservative writers who preface their comments about Ford and Ramirez with prologues full of truisms about how horrible sexual assault is and how its victims have to be heard and how bad this is. And grown-ups know all this stuff. And we don't need to be reminded of it with a lecture every time the subject comes up. The Democrats also know that Republicans come to this conflict with a huge disadvantage that results from accepting your opponent's dubious ideology and dishonest narrative. The Progressive Party can dare the Republicans to ignore the endless specious demands, stop the show trial, and proceed to a vote on Kavanaugh because they know that Republicans, fearful of the optics, using my air fingers quote there, will cave. They know that the 11 male Republican senators on the Judiciary Committee dread the hashtag MeToo movement, casting them as knuckle-dragging Neanderthal sexists who wanted to silence the accuser with their cavalier treatment of a sexual assault survivor, as one of the Ford lawyers put it in a letter. Republicans still don't get that no matter how much you appease the left, nothing will stop them from demonizing you anyway. And let's not forget the old, because he's like 83, the old sort of kind of moderate Democrats like Feinstein and Chuck Schumer have now joined the crowd of trendoid socialists armed with pitchforks and torches. And they're going to go along with these guys because they're horrified. They're frightened of their own party's increasingly rabid left-wing voter base. Hold on. What can we do? What can we do to end these confirmation circuses? And this has been going on for a while, guys. Like I said, you can go back to 1991, Judge Clarence Thomas heading for confirmation. Things are looking good. Boom. Out of nowhere, Anita Hill comes with these ridiculous claims. They did the same thing with Roy Moore. They did the same thing with Herman Cain. They're doing it with this good man here. How do we end it? Just stop having it. There's nothing in the Constitution that says that the Senate's power to give advice and consent to the president, you know, concerning his nominee, has to mean days and days of televised hearings with caterwauling protesters and grandstanding senators that's already made up their minds. Invite written questions from the Senate. Schedule one day for the nominee to respond. Don't put it on television, but make public written transcripts. Remove the television cameras and attention-craving, politically ambitious senators will be gone like a cool breeze. For now, Senator Grassley needs to end this farce. If Ford doesn't show up on Thursday or continues to negotiate for more delays and concessions, no more concessions, no more delays, no more ceding control of this process to Democrat Party lawyers. Don't give Ramirez the time of day. Hold the vote no later than Thursday or Friday if Ford does show up. Make senators go on the record with their votes and hold them to account in November. Put to the test the Democrat claims that a critical mass of women, many of whom with sons they don't want falsely accused, believe the fundamentalist feminist narrative and they'll vote accordingly. To borrow Churchill's definition of appeasement, stop feeding the alligator in the hopes that you will be eaten last. For 50 years, Democrats have proven that they will demonize conservatives as racist and sexist, no matter how often they bow and scrape. So instead, Republicans, Senator Grassley et al., how about acting on principle for a change and shoot the damn alligator? There's a novel concept for you. Well, that took me about where I thought it would take me. We're down to the bottom of the hour. You are listening to A Conservative's Perspective here on Blog Talk Radio through the studios of the Patriot Nation Radio Network. We're going to, like I do every Tuesday and Thursday, I'm just scrolling down through here, checking out the deal, finding out what we're going to listen to. And that's what we're going to play. So, having said that, let me say this. We will be back with more after this brief musical interlude. I'm James Bostic. You're listening to ACP.
Drink to me only, that's all I ask, and I will drink to you.
How long I've been on? I don't care if the sun don't shine. I do my drinking in the evening time when I'm in Las Vegas. You can sit in the sun and camp. I get my color from a sunray lamp when I'm in Las Vegas. I love the laughs and love the life. There's fun of every kind. Next time I come, I'll bring my wife. I'll do that if I lose my mind. A wife in Vegas, take my advice. It's like going to China with a sack of rice. But I love Las Vegas. I love Vegas in the summer. I love it in the fall. I love Vegas, may I say that it's a gasser, yeah. I love Vegas like it's Egypt, and I am Nasser. I love Vegas every moment. Ooh, it's my favorite atmosphere. I love Vegas. Why do I love Vegas? Because my money's here. I love Vegas when I'm winning. I love it when I lose. I love Vegas like the army loves its manuals. I love Vegas like Sinatra loves Jack Daniels. I love Vegas every moment. Oh, Mr. Untrotter, I must cheer. Hey, you smart old. I love Vegas. Ach, du lieber, do I love Vegas. Because my blood is here. I love Vegas when I'm loaded. I love Vegas when I am not. I love Vegas, just like Khrushchev loves being indignant, more than even my wife Jeannie loves being pregnant. I love Vegas every moment. When I leave, I shed a tear. I love Vegas. I'll make it good and clear. It's because my girl's right here.
I'm a fellow with a heart of gold. In the ways of a gentleman, I've been told, the kind of a guy that wouldn't even harm a flea. But if me and a certain character met that guy that invented the cigarette, I'd murder that son of a gun in the first degree. Now, not cause I don't smoke myself, and I don't reckon they'll harm your health. I've smoked all my life and ain't dead yet. But nicotine slaves are all the same. At a petting party or a poker game, everything must stop while they smoke that cigarette. Smoke, smoke, smoke that cigarette. Puff, 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 and if you smoke yourself to death, tell St. Peter at the Golden Gate that you hate to make him wait, but you've just got to have another cigarette.
Smoke, smoke, smoke. Puff, puff, puff.
In a game of chance the other night, old Dame Fortune was doing me right. The kings and queens just kept on coming round.
Coming around.
I played him hard and I played him high, but my bluff didn't work on a certain guy. He kept on raising and laying that money down.
Laying it down.
He'd raise me and I'd raise him. I sweated blood, got a sink or swim. He finally called and didn't raise the bet. I said, Ace is full, pal, how about you? He said, I'll tell you in a minute or two. Right now I've got to have a cigarette.
He's got to smoke, smoke, smoke that cigarette. Puff, 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 and if you smoke yourself to death,
tell St. Peter at the Golden Gate that you hate to make him wait, but you've just got to have another cigarette.
Smoke, smoke, smoke. Puff, puff, puff.
The other night I had a date with the cutest little gal in 48 states, a hybrid uptown fancy little dame. She said she loved me and it seemed to me that things were about like they ought to be, so hand in hand we strolled down Lover's Lane. She was oh so far from a cake of ice, our smooching party was going nice, so help me Hannah, I think I'd been there yet.
I'd have been there yet.
But I give her a kiss and a little squeeze, and she said, Phil, excuse me please, but I've got to have another cigarette.
Another cigarette.
Smoke, smoke, smoke that cigarette. Puff, 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 and if you smoke yourself to death, tell St. Peter at the Golden Gate that you hate to make him wait, but you've just got to have another cigarette.
Smoke, smoke, smoke.
Oh, St. Peter, I sure hate to keep you holding that gate open, but I just got to have another drag over this cigarette. This pretty thing. Thank you, Peter. Thank you.
Invitation to a celebration tomorrow night at Lyceum Hall. Go get your glad rags pressed and wear your two-tone vest to the 8th Street Association barbecue and fancy dress ball. Boogie woogie thumpin' starts the joint a-jumpin' and all them cats is climbing the wall. The party really goes cause things is really froze at the 8th Street Association barbecue and fancy dress ball. There the hoity-toity meets the hoi-polloity. This affair's real farm time. The function goes from 10 until they say amen. How they carry on. Grab your sweetest honey. If you lack the money, the building loan will welcome you call. It only costs a mate to grab yourself some space at the 8th Street Association barbecue and a fancy dress ball. When it's 12 o'clock, they have the grand parade. And when it's 1 a.m., the famous masquerade. And when it's 2 a.m., the festival is spread with the punch bowl, the spirits, and the homemade bread. It's pushing 4 a.m., the festival is clean. They start to count the votes to find a beauty queen. And when it's chiming 5, the folks resume their jive. They call a man. They call a man. They want the leader of that band. Grab your sweetest honey, and if you lack the money, that building loan will welcome you call. It only costs an ace to grab yourself some space at the 8th Street Association Barbecue. And Fancy Dress Ball Amalgamated, Old Fancy Dress Ball Consolidated, that's Fancy Dress Ball Incorporated, the 8th Street Association Barbecue. And Fancy Dress B-A-L-L Ball, some ball.
I know, that's some pretty cool stuff. Dean Martin first, why do I love Vegas? Well, we'll make it good and clear, it's Dean Martin, and that's all we need to know about that. And another one of the coolest guys in the entertainment business, right behind him, that, of course, Phil Harris. Some of you don't know Phil Harris as the layabout band leader on the Jack Benny program. Some of you know him as Baloo the Bear and Friar John and the Friar John Baloo the Bear knockoff from Tailspin. That's all Phil Harris. Great guy. Okay, you know, James Bostic here, Conservative Perspective. It's good to be back with you after the brief musical interlude. You know what, I tell you, this has been a really heavy week in terms of news, and so much of the mainstream, the establishment media, and that includes the Fox types too. Yeah, they're not immune. All the alphabet networks, you know, they just... Basically, since the time Donald Trump said, hey, you know what, I'm running for president, these people have been in, like, panic mode. They've lost their mind. You know, Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, every other black person that has held Donald Trump's hand, that's thrown an arm around his shoulder, that's kissed him on the cheek, that's hugged his neck, that sat with him and told him what a great guy he is, that's given him awards for multiculturalism, now they scream up and down he's a racist. Why? I don't know. He just decided to run for president. That's the only thing different. Okay, it's the same Donald Trump. You have this point in Donald Trump's life to where he goes, I'm going to run for president. And then the point after. He's the same guy. He's the same guy going up to that point. He's the same guy after that point. Now, the guy that goes before that point, not a racist. The guy after that point who becomes president, oh, God, he's a racist. He's a misogynist. He's a homophobe. He's an Islamophobe. He's just this orange skin, bad comb over, goose stepping Hitler, and he's going to run the country right into hell. And I'm like, good heavens, man, you guys. And the Democrats, like I said, this thing, like we've seen, and this is, it's the same playbook. It's the same playbook they used with Clarence Thomas. It's the same play, rather, out of the same playbook that they used with Clarence Thomas. It's the same thing that they ran on Herman Cain when he was running for president. It's the same thing that they ran on Roy Moore down in Alabama. And it's nothing changes. It's like this.
Geez, man, what do you want to do tonight?
Same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world.
Of course!
I mean, well, what are we going to do? Okay, I got it. We'll go with a sexual assault scam. Are you sure? We've done that. No, trust me, it'll work. It always works, doesn't it? It worked. It didn't work on Clarence Thomas. Well, no, but it almost did. It worked on Roy Moore. It worked on Herman Cain. Probably work on this Kavanaugh dude. All we got to do is drag enough money and bourbon through the retired cougar community to see if we can get some dirt on this guy from back in the big 80s when he was a kid. And that's fundamentally what they did. The thing that bothers me on this, really and truly, is, I think I've seen it, there's a couple of things that have been really telling to me, particularly with this. It's stuff that I've seen, but you know what, man? I like that. I'm gonna play that again.
Geez, man, what do you want to do tonight?
Same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world.
Of course!
Ah, Pink, you kill it, dude. So anyway, and that's what the Democrats do. Same thing every night. We're going to try to take over the world. And here's how we're going to do it. We're going to do it by minimizing, invalidating, thereby further injuring, further humiliating, further repressing genuine victims of sexual assault. That's all they're doing. They're not the champion of women. Ted Kennedy, the champion of women, tell that to Mary Jo Kopechne. Gary Hart, champion of women. Maybe a little too much monkey business, if you know what I mean. And let's not talk about Slick Willie. Oh, no, I think maybe we should talk about me. I like talking about me. Let's go ahead and do that. What you want to? No, we're not going to. No. We've talked about you. Well, I know, but I'm still going to be here if you ever, you know, decide you want to bring me up again. I get it. Okay, thanks, Bill, you creep. Get out of here. So anyway, these guys, they do this, and it's the same thing all the time. And I think there's a lot of projection here. Because they know what sells, sex sells. It's salacious. People stop what they're doing. It's sensational. It's tawdry. It's lurid. You know, it's all these things, you know, that generate almost like the perfect car wreck that's guaranteed to make you stop and make you look. You may not want to. You may have to slow down because of traffic. But by God, you don't have to look. But they want you to look. They want you to see the car wreck. They want you to see the heads rolling around. And secretly, maybe you want to see the heads roll around. Maybe you want to hear some of the salacious stuff. But the problem is, it's all a pinup job. It's manipulation. It's product. It is not credible. It's fake. I really, you know what, I think before we get, you know, and this is going to continue. Now, today's Tuesday. Christine Blasey Ford is scheduled tentatively, barring, you know, the need for a hyperbaric chamber to keep her fresh in between questions or what, you know, whatever it is they need. You know, she's going to testify on Thursday. Now, this is the Stones moment. Thursday, I mean, it should have been Friday evening at 10 p.m., which was the initial deadline, but the Republicans got weak-kneed. But this should be the Stones moment. This should be the point where Senator Grassley and the other Republicans on the committee show some stones and call a halt to this farce. It's time to either bring this dude in or cut him loose. Now, we're either going to put him on the bench or we're going to send him home. His reputation in tatters, because there are going to be millions of people in this country that believe this tripe, this unsubstantiated, unconfirmed tripe. I see people, you know, in my social feed, people that I've shared fellowship and kinship with, unquestioningly saying, I believe Christine Blasey Ford. They believe Christine Blasey Ford. They don't believe Juanita Broderick. They believe Deborah Ramirez. They don't believe Kathleen Willey. They don't believe Bonnie Williams. They don't believe Karen Monahan. You probably don't even know who Karen Monahan is. Karen Monahan is one of the two women that have accused Keith Ellison X and has the documentation, the police reports, the medical records, the photographic evidence to support her claims of his physical abuse. He put his hands on this woman. This is the guy that's running. He's deputy chair of the Democrat National Committee, and he's also running for attorney general, a Muslim with ties to care in the Muslim Brotherhood, is running for attorney general in Minnesota. No one is interested in talking to Karen Monahan. I've sent her an email. I've told her who I am, what we do here, and I've told her that we believe her and we would love to have her come on. Hopefully we'll hear something. Who knows? There's probably, you know, these people, their lives are kind of tight. And, you know, you make outreach and you try a few times and we'll see what happens and we hope for the best. Nobody wants to hear from her. Does she not deserve to be heard? Did Juanita Broderick deserve to be minimized? invalidated, ignored, threatened? What about Paula Jones? What about Kathleen Willer? Who knows who else fell into the clutches of Bill Clinton? An unrepentant sexual predator. One of the things, and there's a lot about this, and like I said, I think in the end, truth will out, I think that Justice Kavanaugh will be not only vindicated, but he will be confirmed and placed on the Supreme Court. I can't see it. It could go another way, but even with all this smoke, even with all this discouragement, even with all this last-minute craziness coming out of the Democrats, and that's all it is, last-minute craziness to delay. They want to put this thing off until after the midterms when they believe they can turn the tide, retake the Senate, do away with Kavanaugh, and begin impeachment proceedings on the president. It's not far-fetched. It's their dream. We're running out of time, but we don't have a whole lot of time for me to get too jacked up about anything else. So let me scroll through here. And I know what I'll do. I'll hit search. There we go. I'm looking. I haven't shared it in a while, and I think it's called the. I'm looking for it here in my pocket. Worst. Yeah, the worst analogies ever written in high school papers. You know why? Because we got to laugh every now and then. If we don't laugh, then we're really screwed. And this stuff is very serious, and we're going to treat it seriously. But, you know what, every now and then we got to take a few moments to breathe. And here they are. I'm going to share some of them with you. Uh, 56 worst analogies ever written in high school. Number one, her eyes were like two brown circles with big black dots in the center. This is one of my favorites right here. He was as tall as a 6'3" tree. Her face was a perfect oval, like a circle that had its two sides gently compressed by a thigh master. From the attic came an unearthly howl. The whole scene had an eerie, surreal quality. Like when you're on vacation in another city and Jeopardy comes on at 7 p.m. instead of 7:30. John and Mary had never met. They were like two hummingbirds who had also never met. She had a deep, throaty, genuine laugh, like that sound a dog makes just before it throws up. The ballerina rose gracefully on point and extended one slender leg behind her like a dog at a fire hydrant. He was as lame as a duck, and not the metaphorical lame duck either, but a real duck that was actually lame, maybe from stepping on a landmine or something. Her vocabulary was as bad as like whatever. She grew on him like he was a colony of E. coli. Oh, wait a minute, I'm sorry. She grew on him like she was a colony of E. coli and he was room temperature Canadian beef. Another one of my favorites. The lamp just sat there like an inanimate object. This is a great one. This is my all-time favorite. Number 13 in the list. Number one in my heart. McBride fell 12 stories, hitting the pavement like a hefty bag filled with vegetable soup. His thoughts tumbled in his head, making and breaking alliances like underpants in a dryer without cling-free sheets. He spoke with the wisdom that can only come from experience, man, like a guy who went blind because he looked at the solar eclipse without one of those little boxes with a pinhole in it. And now he goes around the country speaking at high schools about the dangers of looking at a solar eclipse without one of those little boxes with a pinhole. Long separated by cruel fate, the star-crossed lovers raced across the grassy field toward each other like two freight trains, one having left Cleveland at 6:36 p.m., traveling at 55 miles an hour, the other from Topeka at 4:19 p.m. at a speed of 35 miles an hour. Suddenly, shots rang out, as shots are wont to do. The little boat drifted gently across the pond exactly the way a bowling ball would not. They lived in a typical suburban neighborhood with picket fences that resembled Nancy Kerrigan's teeth. Her hair glistened in the rain like nose hair after a sneeze. He fell for her like his heart was a mob informant and she was the East River. You know, even in his last years, Granddaddy had a mind like a steel trap, only one that had been left out so long that it had rusted shut. He felt like he was being hunted down like a dog in a place that hunts dogs, I suppose. She was as easy as the TV guide crossword. She walked into my office like a centipede with 98 missing legs. The plan was simple, like my brother Bernie, but unlike Bernie, this plan just might work. The young fighter had a hungry look, you know, the kind you get from not eating for a while. "Oh, Jason, take me," she panted, her breasts heaving like a college freshman on dollar beer night. "It hurt the way your tongue hurts after you accidentally staple it to the wall. I hate it when that happens." It was an American tradition, like fathers chasing kids around with power tools. He was deeply in love. When she spoke, he thought he heard bells, as if she were a garbage truck backing up. The politician was gone, but unnoticed, like the period after the doctor on a Dr. Pepper can. Her eyes were like limpid pools, only they'd forgotten to put in any pH cleanser. Her date was pleasant enough, but she knew that if her life was a movie, this guy would be buried in the credits as something like Second Tall Man. The thunder was ominous sounding, much like the sound of a thin sheet of metal being shaken backstage during the storm scene in a play. She caught your eye, like one of those pointy hook latches that used to dangle from screen doors and would fly up whenever you banged the screen door open again. Her pants fit her like a glove. Well, maybe more like a mitten, actually. Ooh, he smells bad, she thought. As bad as Calvin Klein's obsession would smell if it were called enema and was made from spoiled Spam burgers instead of natural floral fragrances. They were as good friends as the people on Friends. He was as bald as one of the Three Stooges, either Curly or Larry, you know, the one that goes woo 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 woo. The baseball player stepped out of the box and spit like a fountain statue of a Greek god that scratches itself a lot and spits brown, rusty tobacco water and refuses to sign autographs for all the little Greek kids unless they pay him lots of drachmas. I felt a nameless dread. Well, probably there's a long German name for it, like Gespukelkeit or something, but I don't speak German. Anyway, it's this dread that nobody knows the name for, like those little square plastic gizmos that close your bread bags. I don't know the name for those either. Her artistic sense was exquisitely refined, like someone who can tell butter from, I can't believe it's not butter. It came down the stairs looking very much like something no one had ever seen before. Her lips were red and full, like tubes of blood drawn by an inattentive phlebotomist. And I think, I don't know if I can read any more of those with a straight face, so we're just going to stop right there. We got to have a little bit of fun. You know what? We're 2 minutes out, so what we're going to do is I'm going to go ahead and call it a night with this. ACP can be heard. But that's easy for me to say. I do this. I talk a lot. Thank you, Guinevere. We have 90 seconds left. ACP can be heard here on blogtalkradio.com. Blogtalkradio.com. Look up the Patriot Nation Radio Network. You'll find us Tuesdays and Thursdays live, 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight, and soon to be Standard Time as well. We also have a recorded program that goes out over the Talk America Radio Network. TalkAmericaRadio.org. Go get you some of the best talk radio, some of the best hosts out there. ACP, thank you once again. And God, that snarky British chick, she always makes me lose my train of thought. Anyway, you can check us out there. They have two audio streams at TalkAmericaRadio.org, the Liberty and Justice stream. ACP can be heard on either one of those at various times throughout the day and the week. That's all the time we have, ladies and gentlemen. God bless each and every one of you. God bless America. We'll be back on Thursday taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. You guys take good care. We'll see you then.